This episode is brought to you by DeSanto Propane. DeSanto has been serving the energy needs of upstate New York since 1937. They're a fourth-generation family-owned business that has prioritized dependability, reliability, and integrity. If you have energy needs, call DeSanto and tell them we sent you. Visit DeSantoPropane.com to learn more. And by the Fox family of dealerships on Route 5 in Auburn. Check out their vast inventory of new and used cars by visiting FoxDealerships.com. All right, welcome to episode 212 of the Inside the FLX podcast. This week, we are going one-on-one with the only candidate officially running in the New York State Assembly District 131 at the moment. Of course, that is likely to change in the next few days or so. But right now, we have Matt Miller in studio with us. We're going to learn a whole lot about his campaign this hour. Really interesting conversation. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having us. Excited to be here.
So, all right, first things first, let's get this out of the way. React to the news yesterday, obviously, that Assemblyman Brian Kolb will not be seeking re-election. That was a surprise to some, others not a surprise. But what's your takeaway from that announcement?
Yeah, absolutely. We were not surprised by the announcement at all. We were kind of preparing for all options that were going to come through the pipeline. We've been running this campaign since August, and our message is being received well. New York 131 is ready for a change, and we're prepared to make that happen.
And so just so everyone's clear, this does this change how you guys are approaching the race in any way, shape, or form, or is it just sort of all full steam ahead, and no matter who or what is in the race, you're just moving forward?
Exactly. Full steam ahead, and we're sticking with our message. We're talking to the voters, putting ourselves out there. We're going to, no matter who they're going to put up, if they put up anybody, we're just going to take it straight to November and take it right across the finish line.
All right. So for those who might not have heard your name before yet, obviously we're still very early in the process, but walk us through what your candidacy is sort of in a nutshell.
Yeah. So basically, I'm 25 years old, and I really wanted to get that youth engagement going out there into being to the involved in the political process. We wanted to have a grassroots, working class, kind of the people, for the people, by the people representative. Back in 2018, when I was kind of getting involved into politics and really kind of looking into it, I noticed a bunch of down ballot boxes that were empty. And that really kind of made me angry. So I went and looked into it and figured out what was going on, saw my experience, realized that matched up really well with the assembly, and figured, all right, let's do this.
Yeah. So when someone asks you, why are you running, what do you tell them? What's the sort of inspiration for why you chose now as opposed to, you know, 2 years from now or 2 years ago, or, you know, vice versa?
Absolutely. I really have a passion for service and helping out my community. I was an intelligence analyst in the New York Army National Guard, worked in various healthcare centers and trauma centers, emergency rooms. And as I was kind of figuring out what the next step was going to be for me, I realized, okay, this is something that I could actually really do. So I looked into it even more and decided, okay, this is what we're going to do, and we're going to keep pushing forward with it, use the experience that I have, and go out and do it.
What was that experience like? Because I think to the average person, they're going to hear that, and they're going to say, what? You did? Excuse me?
Exactly.
So walk us through what a day might have looked like when that was your life.
Yes, when I was in the National Guard, I was an intelligence analyst. So we had 12-hour work days. I would actually go in at midnight and work till noon. But what our role was gathering all the information, seeing the trends, seeing what was working, what wasn't working, kind of getting information from the ground, intelligence from the from different systems and that sort of thing. And then really kind of going in and figuring out what the best solution was. And then my job would be to take that solution in front of captains, majors, generals, and present to them the solutions and the capabilities that we have to going forward. So that kind of experience kind of directly correlates in with being an assemblyman. I would have to go out there, get all the information, see the trends, see what's working, see what's not, be on the ground getting that information, and then in this way presenting a solution in the form of a bill.
And it's I'm glad you brought that up, because probably one of the biggest pieces of feedback we see on the editorial side about Albany in general is that it's a chaotic mess, and it seems very difficult to get specific pieces of legislation through if it's not bundled in with the budget, unfortunately. So when you look at your experience and you look at sort of what Albany is right now, what do you see as some of the big opportunities or areas where your experience could really plug in well and sort of change maybe some of the dynamic in some of those conversations.
Absolutely, and especially working in emergency and trauma centers, kind of used to dealing with that chaotic mess and kind of just rolling with the punches, keep going through and making sure that you get the mission done. Big opportunity for us is I know there's a big issue with the $6 billion deficit, kind of different ways of the budget process, how that is handled. A big opportunity for us is going to be able to go out there and tax that ultra wealthy. We have about 112 billionaires in New York State, and really kind of making sure that we target that and making sure that they're paying their fair share is going to really be able to alleviate that deficit that we have going on while also still being able to fund some really critical programs that New York State is lacking in.
And when you look at the process, one of the criticisms is that there are so many bills and pieces of legislation that get bundled into the budget. Would you like to see an Albany that works sort of more on an issue-by-issue basis, or do you see the process that plays out now as maybe not the best, but what's necessary?
I definitely understand that sometimes you need to bundle some things together. That's just kind of the nature of things. But definitely that step-by-step, issue-by-issue. I like to kind of call it that separation of legislation. If something does not correlate, there's no reason why they need to be in the same bill. Then that puts people into hard positions, voting for things that they want to vote for but can't because of some kind of little thing that got put in there. So it makes it really muddled and creates a lot of this wrong picture of actually what's going on.
Mm-hmm. So what are, say, the top three issues that you've sort of spotlighted through your campaign so far that you really want to focus on and think you can bring the most change for?
Definitely. The first one would be climate change. Really tackling that head on. I know right now the Ontario County and Seneca County, which is both of in our district, are receiving natural disaster relief because of how much flooding we have going on in our area, and that's definitely affected by climate change. A lot of people don't realize that our region is destined for a lot wetter area with climate change. Mm-hmm. And with everything going on with that, it's going to affect our farms, it's going to affect our lakes, which we already are starting to see. Lots of opportunity to help our farmers out in this instance, having them be a part of our solution rather than the problem, which people are painting this light, and really focusing on job creation along with it. We're also focusing on healthcare, mainly focusing on lowering prescription drug prices and access to medication as well. Really cool way of doing that is giving some pharmacists more prescribing power while they're working alongside those primary care physicians and being able to directly prescribe patients' medications. And the other one is community resilience, and that's kind of that broader sense of social problems that we have going on, mental health, homelessness, opioid epidemic, but also infrastructure as well. So really making sure our communities are built well, our community members are functioning well, and that they're set up for success in New York.
And that last piece, I want to hone in on, we're going to talk about the other items mm-hmm. in a minute, of course, but the infrastructure piece, because that's one of those items that it doesn't matter whether it's a Republican or a Democrat, infrastructure tends to come up repeatedly. Mm-hmm. When you look at infrastructure in the district, what are some of the focus areas that you kind of see as really problematic that need to be addressed sooner rather than later?
Definitely. Really just reinforcing the infrastructure that we currently have. Yeah. It's been so outdated, and I know it costs a lot of money, but really making sure that we get those. I mean, over in Victor, you have streets flooding out so cars can't drive by. You have all kinds of issues that are going on with infrastructure. And while we're getting ready and fighting climate change in our healthcare, we need to make sure that that kind of infrastructure is ready to go as well. Mm-hmm. So really just kind of the infrastructure that we have that's crumbling, really reinforcing that, but getting it set up for the future problems that we have coming up as well.
Because you're bringing up things that ultimately will cost money to implement, mm-hmm. I'm sure there are a few people who are listening right now who are going to say, he's a Democrat, he wants to spend more of my tax money, he's going to raise taxes. Life is going to be even harder in New York State. Debunk that or walk us through how you sort of respond to that when it comes up, because I'm sure it does from time to time.
Absolutely. And this is really an important issue for me, too, because I do work part-time while I'm campaigning. Okay. Before that, I worked full-time at the liquor store that I'm currently at Ryan Wine and Spirits. I am a working-class New Yorker, so these taxes and these spendings, they directly impact me. Yeah. And while we're talking about that, you know, in a budget proposal, we have a proposal out there that's going to lower middle-class taxes and support small businesses. So really going forward and making sure that we're doing that is really appropriate. And that's where I was talking about before, where we tax the ultra-wealthy. With those billionaires that we have in New York State, I mean, there's one that has $23 billion. take $2 billion away from them, they still have $21 billion. And we're going to be able to fund some critical infrastructure just off of one of those billionaires that we have. And people are like, oh, but then they're going to flee New York State. They're staying in New York State because they have their 7th, 8th, and 9th house in New York State. Being able to really make sure that they're paying their fair share so we can really start taking that burden off of everyday New Yorkers.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you look at the issues that you sort of spotlighted when you were heading into the campaign, mm-hmm. what were some of the things that you heard from voters, and did it align, or were there some things that sort of popped up that maybe weren't quite on your radar to start with, but then, you know, got there because of the things you were hearing?
Absolutely. Definitely things were pretty much aligned. There was some slight variation, especially when it came to healthcare, whether I supported the New York Health Act, the current system that we have, or introducing a public option. That's kind of a normal rift that's happening among Democrats right now. But while we go in and deep down and explain everything that's going on, we can pretty much get on the same page with most people when it comes to the healthcare aspect. But really, those three issues that I laid out were the ones that we've been hearing the most of, and that's why we really wanted to focus on those.
Is it problematic in your view, especially with your experience, that in politics it sort of seems as though to the average, I'll say the outsider looking in, it feels like oftentimes politicians are looking for the easiest solution or the quickest solution rather than maybe something that would be more complex, more complicated, maybe a little more difficult to sell to constituents, but would be far more effective in the grand scheme? And if so, how would you sort of enter into that and try to bring some of that nuance into these conversations? And maybe, you know, and you said healthcare, and that sort of sparked my mind, where it's either single payer or nothing or what we have now. And it's sort of like there could be an in-between, there could be a nuanced solution. So how would you get into that sort of conversation?
Definitely, just having the conversation in general. Right now, our current representative is just lacking in transparency and getting out there and talking to voters. So really getting on the ground and talking to people and seeing where their minds are at, what's driving them, and just having that open, honest conversation to see what's going. I look at it as if I get elected in November, I have 2 years to get as much done as I possibly can. Whether it's complex or not complex, we're going to go after it. That's mm-hmm. what needs to happen. It's not about what's going to come next for the next reelection or how I'm going to get more power or how we're going to do this. It's about what needs to get done. Now that we've had Democrat control in the Senate, a lot of that low-hanging fruit has already been picked. And now it's really time to get into that nitty-gritty and really figuring out how we can stop the root problems of what we are things that we're seeing, and really trying to lift up all those boats in New York State.
Has that been part of your pitch in terms of to voters on both sides of the aisle as you've talked to them? Because it would certainly seem at this point in the game, the way Albany is structured now, that having a Democrat representing a rural district in upstate New York would probably be a little more beneficial on the policy side than having someone in the minority who maybe can't get as much legislatively done over the course of a 2-year period.
Definitely. Having that being in that majority and having a stronger seat at the table, we can definitely really start empowering our district. It's really important, too, to know that I'm going to be an independent thinker. Even though I am a Democrat, there's a big difference between an upstate Democrat and a downstate Democrat. I'm going to have that independent thinking and not always fall right in line behind Democratic leadership. Right now with Farmington, with the VLT funding cut that Cuomo took out of the proposal, that's a big hit for our area, and that's something I'm not for. I saw the Board of Supervisors for Ontario County say that they want that back, and I'm definitely right there alongside with them and calling for that. We really just have to understand that it doesn't matter if you're a Democrat or Republican, that the issues that we're facing right now are so important and so vital that we need to take care of them, that if we have a seat at that majority table, if we have somebody who's an independent thinker and really listening, we can make sure our problems are getting solved.
With how polarized the political spectrum is right now, how do you approach folks and say, and I will look at this district specifically and say the more rural parts of the district mm-hmm. as opposed to the more populated portions of it. How do you reach some of those voters who maybe have a little bit of a different life experience and sort of see this as, you know, the political class trying to take away from the folks who have worked hard for what they have, and that sort of argument?
Exactly. Though I didn't grow up in the most rural of areas, I have that same experience. I am working class, and this is my life too, and this is exactly what's going to affect me if this is what this happens. it's really important just to let the folks know in these rural communities that they are so much a part of our group and our foundation and solutions that can happen. Really just talking in their language and not coming in like a big city Democrat that wants to take away their farms and blame them for all the problems. We have to understand that we want to help them, we want to empower them, and they are part of a solution and that we need them in this fight in order to make sure that we're going forward with what we need.
And I'm just sort of bouncing off of the feedback that we've been getting a little bit here. Mm-hmm. Your age.
Yeah.
It's come up. It took all of 16 minutes for it to come up. Again, for those who might be concerned about the fact that you're 20-something and not 40-something, 50-something, 60-something, like a lot of folks are used to, in representatives, why is that a good quality, do you think, to bring to the table and sort of to be part of the next sort of turn of elected leaders?
Definitely. I've come to age in an era of just complete chaos when it comes to politics. Whether it's on the left or the right, there's just so much that's happening right now that the old way of doing politics is just not working anymore. To have that fresh voice, to have that new generation of representation and leadership going in with those kind of new perspectives of seeing, okay, I've seen all the things that are not working right now, and not to say that I have all the answers by any means, but really having that fresh perspective of what the problems are of today and not the problems of what 60 years ago were, even though we're still facing some of those problems. Yep. Really having that fresh perspective and those bold ideas to kind of move forward is really important. Just the old way of politics is not working anymore.
And it seems like, and I'm pleasantly surprised, I'll say this, typically when I have someone running for office and on the show, one of the first things they mention during their sort of what are the most important issues? Jobs. I'm going to bring jobs. I'm going to make mm-hmm. sure jobs are here.
Yes.
You didn't say that first. Why? Why have you not mentioned that yet, even though that is a frequent flyer on the...
Definitely, because jobs kind of plays into all of these issues. When we talk about healthcare, when we talk about climate change and community resilience, jobs are going to naturally come with those policies that we're talking about. When we're talking about the climate, there's a massive opportunity to bring real jobs to upstate New York and make sure we really have that going forward and being a forefront. We're building an entire wind farm off the coast of New York. Instead of going overseas to get those parts, we can be manufacturing them right up here, right in Ontario County, with proper infrastructure, that's green infrastructure going the right way. So now we're building and bringing in union jobs for laborers who are constructions and making sure that we're really kind of powering that in, that you don't always have to go to college. We're also expanding those opportunities for jobs for people who are going into those trade crafts as well. Healthcare, if we're switching over our insurance and getting completely rid of private insurance, we're going to lose jobs in that aspect. So how can we look at healthcare and make sure everybody is covered but increasing those jobs? Community resilience, we're talking about homelessness, mental health. Right there, big, huge opportunities for providers to come in to increase those kind of services as well, which is also going to increase jobs. So everything that we're out there talking about, jobs naturally comes with.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you mention infrastructure, when we talk about infrastructure, and then we sort of back it with this whole idea of economic development and how economic development happens in upstate New York in particular, has it been a little bit of cart before the horse here with a lot of focus on bringing in employers, bringing jobs, trying to land those big, flashy economic development wins, but not investing enough into the core infrastructure that can actually support sustained economic development and economic growth?
Absolutely. Especially if we look at New York State in a broader sense, if we look at the whole Amazon debacle that happened, if we were willing to pay all that money in tax incentives, and now it comes out a little bit later that New York State was willing to pay Amazon salaries, we kind of have to wonder, well, why isn't that money going right into our roads, going into our small businesses? Why aren't we giving those tax breaks to everyday New Yorkers? It kind of makes you wonder, okay, well, we really need to figure that out and really make sure that that money and those kind of incentives are coming into ours, our areas.
And would this also sort of play into the idea that maybe from the state down, or from Albany down, I should say, the focus needs to be more on small business and ways to sort of help the sole proprietor grow into larger employer rather than the reverse of that?
Absolutely. Incentivizing some big companies to come in to really make a huge economic splash is important. But like you said, we really have to make sure we have that foundation laid out perfectly. And a big thing lacking for our area is public transportation. Mm-hmm. We kind of invest in public transportation and really build that up. That really comes along with economic development and making sure people can actually go and spend their money in the economy rather than not being able to get there at all.
Mm-hmm. Now, I want to hit a few policy issues and mm-hmm. just sort of get where you stand on them now. so we can sort of get a barometer moving forward. Higher education is what New York State has done over the last four or five years, with some different programs. Enough, or does more need to be done, or is there a shift that needs to happen in some way, shape, or form?
It's definitely a step in the right direction, but more can definitely be done as well. We also really need to start focusing on empowering trade schools as well and letting people know that college isn't the only opportunity, especially in a rural area like ours. The job opportunities for trade schools are much higher than if someone's trying to go in for writing or for getting a doctor's. We have a lot of hospitals around this area as well, but it's still kind of difficult to get a job if you're really looking for one. So really kind of taking the next step, making sure that higher education is more affordable for everyday New Yorkers, but also kind of switching some of that emphasis also onto empowering those trade school programs.
And is that sort of an opportunity, I guess, for community colleges, in your view, since we saw the report a couple weeks ago, enrollment at those community colleges throughout the state and specifically in the region really have declined hard over the last 10 years or so?
Definitely. And then the community colleges would be a great resources for those people who are going into those trade programs to connect with people who are already in those trades. And then it gives those people who are in those trades a good resource to kind of find that pipeline building that they want, right, to make sure that they have enough people to go out and meet the demand of the people in the district.
Public education, K-12, easily one of the most hot-button issues right now. Of course, the city of Rochester is dealing with its own nightmare on the funding side. Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, most school districts feel like they're a little bit undercut right now. I'm not going to ask you for a proposed solution because that's
right,
complicated. But where do you sort of stand on what the role should be of Albany to correct this and sort of get things moving in the right direction?
We need to fully start funding our schools. If we look at our district alone, if you look at Victor School, Central School District, they have a fantastic program, great facilities. They know exactly what's going on. They have great resources available to them. If you look all the way down to the southern part of our district, going down towards Naples, where it's a lot smaller school district, they're really struggling and lacking. Yeah. I went to school in West Ronequoit, and I had a really great education. Yeah. And I think about all the opportunities I had in that district because of the funding that we had. But then if I think about, you know, the counterparts in Naples, they didn't get anywhere near the experience that I got as a high school student as well. So really making sure that we're funding our schools is really important, and making sure that we're empowering the teachers and professionals who are in those buildings as well. Really making sure that Albany is there for them and that they're not there for Albany.
Mm-hmm. Bail reform and discovery reform, obviously there's a lot of debate right now about what the future of these two changes is even going to be through this legislative session. But assuming things stand the way they are now, come next year and you are in office, what would be sort of your take and your approach on how to handle that?
I am for bail reform. I do support the changes that were made that came into effect January 1st. I know that the Senate Democrats are looking into a proposal to roll back some of those changes. Not to say I wouldn't be interested in looking at that. I definitely want more time to pass and get more information and more data, kind of see what really is going on before we have to act. Only a month into it, there's not enough to know. I know there's a lot of fear-mongering and divisiveness going on. There's definitely things that need to be looked at, but the elimination of bail is really important. But just giving it more time to see how it's going to affect, how it's really going to affect our communities. You know, people who are arrested and then placed with bail, if someone has that money, they could be released anyways.
Right.
So some of these people who are committing these crimes could already be released back out onto the streets. So we're eliminating that two systems of justice, depending on if you're wealthy or if you're poor. But with to that Senate proposal, we really have to wait a little bit more time to kind of see what's happening with it.
And, of course, environmental issues.
Mm-hmm.
This district has obviously two very high-profile landfills, which have gotten a whole lot of attention, especially at the local level, over the last, say, 5, 6, 7 years. But that isn't the only one. You've got the harmful algal blooms. You've got all these different sort of issues coming together. What is the sort of menu of options or ways that you could possibly approach these number of issues and try to make some meaningful ground up?
Definitely.
On all of them.
Yeah, there's a lot of different things that we can do. When it goes to the landfills, really the most important thing that we can do as a community is understanding the concept of reuse, reduce, and recycle. Really making sure that we can, as a community, kind of be our own EPA and making sure what's being put into those landfills is what's correct and that not, we're not putting an overabundance into those. When we talk about agriculture on the lakes, if we work with our farmers to practice green practices and green agriculture, like capturing carbon into the soil. We can make sure that the correct runoff is going into the lake, so we're not having too bad of algal blooms, and we can combat that climate change and go with that as well. But what's really interesting about that is we can incentivize that as well. Farmers are struggling pretty bad right now. The mental health that they're facing is because of the burdens that they're facing right now, too, is really starting to cripple them. And if we can go in there and say, hey, here's some solutions how we can better our community, better your farms, and better your pockets, it's a great opportunity to work together with that. I know the supervisor in Gorham right now is kind of looking into that carbon capture as well and really seeing how we can bring these farmers into the bigger fold, into our solutions. We can even look into a carbon dividend. So companies who are polluting too much, they have to pay a certain percentage on that, and then that money goes directly back into the people. So there's plenty of options that we can look into that are really great. Like you said, talked about before, even bringing in more jobs for creating new infrastructure that go along to get us off of that fossil fuels and more into the renewable energy. We're going to need that kind of infrastructure, that technology, so it's going to create jobs as well. So when it comes to the environment, it really opens up a huge picture for us. But it's also fiscally responsible, too, because if you're looking out in Texas and California and Arizona, people who are using wind and solar energy are paying less on their utility bills. So much now that conservative mayors in Texas are switching to 100% renewable energy because they're seeing that, okay, this costs less. We're conservatives. We're all about saving money, and we have the data to show that this is saving money. So let's do it.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting you bring that up and you sort of paint this picture of a district that is very different. One of the stories that we've seen play out in the last month is sort of questions and concerns around food access. And it's amazing how something even as small as that can become a very big issue if one grocery store shuts down. If folks want to learn more about your campaign, where can they find you?
Yeah, definitely. So they can go on Facebook or Twitter, Matt Miller for New York. They can go to our website at mattmillerfornewyork.com, and there you can donate, sign up to volunteer, kind of see what's going on with our campaign and getting updates as well.
Anywhere in particular that you will be in the coming weeks or months on the schedule right now for folks to get out there and shake your hand?
Yeah, so the biggest one right now coming up is on starting February 25th. We have our petitioning, so whether you're a Democrat, Republican, or whatever party is, you're going to have some folks knocking on your doors. So I'm going to be all out over the district in the next coming weeks, and then we have some events coming up planned that will be posted on our social media and website too.
Awesome. Matt, thanks for the time.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining us this hour on Inside the FLX. I'm Josh Durso, and we'll be back next week with another episode. In the meantime, download the FingerLakes1.com app to have the latest local breaking news, alerts, and podcasts delivered right to your hand each and every day. Follow and subscribe to the show on YouTube, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. If you enjoy the program and can support us, head over to patreon.com/FL1 to pledge monthly support. If you have an idea for a show or simply want to let your voice be heard, drop us an email or leave us a voice message by visiting insidethefLX.com. Thanks again for listening. I'll see you back here next week. Thank you.